Side Hustle Show 139, building multiple income streams with for-profit hobbies.
Welcome to the Side Hustle Show, where aspiring part-time entrepreneurs learn how to turn their side hustle dreams into reality. Because your 9-to-5 may make you a living, but your 5-to-9 makes you alive. And now, your host, Nick Loper.
What's up? What's up? Nick Loper here. Welcome to the Side Hustle Show, where we're going to explore ways to use your free time to build more financial freedom. I'm back from vacation, getting back into hustle mode to finish 2015 strong. Now, in this episode, you're going to learn from my guest, John Rauta, how he's built four side hustle income streams in addition to his full-time job as an IT manager. Now, he calls these projects for-profit hobbies. And the ones that we're going to get into today are teaching part-time, app development, Kindle publishing, and a local computer support business. Now, John's approach and insights definitely got my gears turning and are sure to get your gears turning on how your hobbies and interests outside of work may be able to turn into income streams on their own. And so that's what this episode is all about. John's definitely somebody we can learn a lot from on just sheer productivity, if nothing else. He's a TEDx speaker. He's the host of the Geek Leader podcast at ageekleader.com. He's a father. And of course, he's doing all of these side hustles and working full-time as well. All the notes and links are at sidehustlenation.com/hobbies. And while you're there, be sure to grab the free PDF download with all the highlights and top tips from this conversation with John Rauta. Let's do it.
I currently teach part-time at two local colleges, York Technical College and at Winthrop University. I've also taught online at a few different schools, but I really got into that just because someone asked me. They came up to me and said, hey, would you be interested in teaching a class? You know, this summer we're short on teachers. I think you would do a great job at it. And I was like, no, I don't like to speak in front of people. But eventually they convinced me, and it's worked out really well because it kind of keeps me sharp and keeps me, you know, up to speed on what's new. It's also a great way to recruit talent, you know, if you're managing IT people like I am. It's a nice little way to find out who the fresh faces are.
Okay, absolutely. So these are local, you're in North Carolina or South Carolina?
Yeah, just across the border from North Carolina.
And they're local schools, but also an online engagement?
Yeah, I've done some online schools. I actually taught one online class in Phoenix. And what's really cool about that is kind of once you spend the time to set up the course, it almost runs itself. It's after it's set up, it's more like you just check the emails.
Oh, really? Okay. Because it's pre-recorded.
Right, right. And most of it's not even videos. Most of it's like they give you the PowerPoints. And I would always do like a short, you know, 5-minute introduction to the chapter, and then most of those online courses come with their own simulators or their own course material with it. And you just kind of be there to guide the students through it, to answer any questions and to grade the tests as they come in.
Interesting. Do you have any teaching credentials, teaching like certificates or something to qualify you to do this?
What it requires, like in the state of South Carolina, to teach at a technical college, you have to have a certain number of graduate school hours. So I do have a master's degree, which, you know, qualifies me to do that.
Okay. So you don't have to study specifically to be a teacher?
No, you do not.
Okay.
And actually, depending on whether it's a transfer course or not, you don't even need that graduate hours. If it's a non-transfer course, you just have to have a bachelor's degree.
Okay. Interesting. And it was just a matter of somebody approaching you and say, hey, do you want this gig?
Yeah. And the cool thing about it, you know, if you think about when you go to school for a 3-credit hour. So you spend 3 hours a week at school. Well, it's the same thing as a teacher. You spend just that time at school. And, you know, after you've done it the first semester does take some planning and some preparation. But after that, you basically teach the same material with minor updates.
Okay. So it's not taking a huge amount of time if it's just one class a semester or something like that.
That's right. Yeah. And I do two. I do one night in the evenings right now and then one during my lunch break. Oh. 2 days a week.
All right. Fair enough. How much do these gigs get paid? Ballpark.
Yeah, so ballpark, usually between like $2,000 and $3,000, depending on whether it's a transfer course or not.
Okay, so $2,000-$3,000 for, you know, a handful of hours every week.
Right, it's about 3 hours a week for approximately 12 weeks.
All right, that's not bad.
No, and the, you know, money per hour is pretty good.
Absolutely. So if I wanted to do this, would I just like reach out to like a technical college and say like, do you need professors for, you know, whatever topic I'm qualified to speak on?
Yeah. So what I did after my first one, I started looking around and a lot of colleges would have on their website just a generic adjunct professor. And they would kind of just leave it blank. And if you apply for that, a lot of times you don't get anything in response back, which is kind of unfortunate. But if you continue at it, usually like the second or third time you apply, or if you can do a little bit of investigation and look for like the department chair and send them just a cold email and say, hey, you know, these are my credentials. Here's my resume. I'm interested in teaching this course online or in person. And they'll usually get back to you pretty quick with, you know, putting you on the list of professors.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, we talked so much about like building courses for your own website or for Udemy or something like that. And it's like we kind of overlook the fact like there's a community college like right down the block from where we live. So it's like, man, maybe I should go over there a little bit. Now, are you free to like repurpose? Like if you wanted to create a Udemy course around this topic or sell something directly yourself, like are you allowed to do that or is it they own the material?
Most of the time, the material for like the technical colleges is very specific to that course. Like if I'm teaching a Cisco networking course, it's particular to Cisco and I wouldn't be able to like generically take that away. But some of the courses I've designed myself and those I have full rights to do whatever I really want to with that course. And some of them I have videotaped and kind of made available and I've, you know, reused some of the PowerPoints and some material that I put online before.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, that's a very cool part-time hobby, part-time side hustle idea.
Yeah. And one thing that's also cool about it is if you do videotape it, you kind of have an audience. And I think a lot of the videos where you have an audience and you're kind of teaching, it adds some credibility to the person teaching the course.
Instead of just a talking head in front of a camera?
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah, I like that. Actually, Ari, myself from lessdoing.com, he's got like this whole, you know, automate, outsource, delegate kind of thing about productivity. And that was what he did. Like he originally taught this class in person and just had somebody in the back film it. And then all of a sudden now he's, you know, he's repurposed that to Udemy, to his own platform. It's like, okay, that is smart. Cause now it's like, oh, he's not just saying these ideas. Like he actually got people to come listen to him in person. So
yeah.
I thought that was cool. And now you've also got kind of this smartphone app empire that's going on that's a few years in the making.
Back in 2010, I had my first app get released to the App Store. And to be 100% honest with it, I had no intention of making any money at all doing that.
It's just a fun experiment to play around with?
Yeah, I was told at work that, you know, my team would eventually take over the mobile apps and start building mobile apps. So we needed to figure that out. So just as a professional development thing, I spent a few hours trying to build a little game myself. And once I figured out how to do it, I put it out there and I started noticing like people were downloading it. And I had no monetization strategy. It was just a free little silly time-wasting game. But eventually I said, well, you know, maybe I can put ads on that. Maybe I can make a freemium model. And I kind of expanded that and made, you know, similar games and just kind of grew that. And I've got over 50 apps now.
Wow. And you coded these all yourself?
No, not all of them. I created several of them myself. And then I started, you know, going out to places like Code Canyon and where you could buy, you know, templates and pre-built apps and just reskin them. And I would reskin them and usually modify them and put some kind of method to where there's different levels. Because a lot of those app templates are just like one level. And you can like make more levels to make it a little bit more addictive.
Okay. Yeah, I never even heard of like doing, you know, buying the source code or buying these templates until talking with Carter Thomas last month or the month or two ago. So it's a really interesting kind of shortcut to development. It was like, hey, you know, 80% of this may already exist, may already be created. You can just kind of make your own custom tweaks to it. Beyond that, after you saw this, the first app was getting some downloads, getting some traction. Did you go back and try and add like advertising screens to it or adding like a premium version of it?
Yeah, so I did both actually. I added some little banner ads at the bottom and those did okay, not great. And then I added like a full screen ad that, you know, shows up this really annoying in between all the levels. And then I, at the time of placing that, I also put a remove ads button.
Okay.
So you can pay 99 cents to get the ads, you know, to go away.
Okay.
And that made a big difference, really, in the revenue.
Yeah, what's it obviously, you know, was worthwhile. It was worthwhile to pursue if you built 49 more.
Yeah, it was. And, you know, I've kind of slowed down a lot on the app market. At the time, back in 2010 and 11, even 2012, it was like you just put an app out there and you would immediately get 1,000 downloads without doing anything.
Just because it would show up like in the, you know, what's new category or something?
Exactly. That was the what's new category at the time. And Apple also had something with their app store that if you updated your app, you also got placed in the what's new category.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, if one of my apps started doing really bad, I would just go and do a new update to it and then, you know, maybe change some graphics around a little bit and add another feature and re-release it. It'd pop up in the what's new, get a few more 1,000 downloads.
Wow, but they don't have that anymore?
No, that is not that's not there anymore. So now what I've kind of had to do if I release a new app, one of the things I've built in with the advertising is kind of a house ads. So I can put my own ads for a period of time. So maybe like the first 2 days that a new app comes out, I won't make any revenue off my old apps. Instead, I would just share my ad for the new app to kind of get that kickstarted a little bit.
Gotcha. Yeah, if you got that, if you got that portfolio, that's a good way to go about spreading the word for something new. Are you worried about, you know, app store optimization and keyword search and all this other stuff that people say to get that initial download traction?
I do a little bit. I don't really spend a whole lot. I really want to make sure the icon looks good because honestly, I don't read descriptions when I'm downloading an app. I look at the screenshot and the icon. So I kind of want to make sure those two things look good. And I do add some keyword into the keywords field. And what I do with that is I basically just go to Google and search for apps like mine and try to find, you know, what keywords that those apps are showing up for.
Are you actively building new apps or just kind of letting this ride now?
I'm letting it ride for the most part. I did do one app in 2015 and I have a goal of doing three. So I'll try to squeeze two more out this last quarter if I can.
But they're still, the ones that are out there are still relatively, well, very, very much passive at this point. And just kind of, you have to worry about like the code breaking as iOS updates and stuff.
Yeah, that's really all I've been doing. I had a new son that was born in February of 2014.
Oh, congratulations.
Oh, thank you. And I basically stopped developing. I didn't touch a single app from the time he was born until October when iOS 7 came out. And it just happened to train wreck all of my apps. Mm. And I had to go in and just do some quick updates to get those fixed and back running. But yeah, it's been relatively passive, and it's still, honestly, I'm still making about the same that I was when I was actively working on them.
That's pretty cool. Are you syndicating to Android too?
For some of them. I haven't done that with all of them because it is a challenge sometimes to, you know, redevelop it for Android as well.
Okay.
Especially the ones that I purchased. If I purchased them, then I'd almost have to relearn how they built it and to rebuild it for Android.
Gotcha. All right, so you got the professorship thing going. You got the mobile app business going. That's relatively passive. You've got what's next? Oh, you got the self-publishing business going. You got a handful of books up on Amazon.
Yeah. I did a couple of three books right now, and I'm working on a fourth. And I've also kind of put those out on ACX for Audible, and I've actually gotten really good traction from that.
Really? I haven't done any of the audiobooks yet.
You really should.
So you're finding good traction there?
Yeah, actually, one of my books does way better on Audible than it has in Amazon.
Really? Did you record yourself or you used their system to like audition?
I use their system because I have a phobia of reading in public. So, yeah, I just used ACX. And I honestly didn't want to have to like hire someone and pay them, and I wasn't sure if I'd make any money off of Audible because I've heard some horror stories about it. So I just went on the first book and I just did the profit sharing. So with the ACX program, you can get someone to like audition and say, you know, you'll split the royalties 50-50 with the reader. You don't have to pay anything up front. You just kind of audition a few people and pick one and let them have it.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I should definitely do that.
So it's almost a no-brainer if you just want to add another, you know, revenue stream. And yeah, one of my books didn't do very well at all on Amazon, honestly, and I kind of thought it would. It was a Mud Run book. It did okay, but then I put it on Audible, and I think in 2 days I doubled my sales from the first month in Amazon.
Wow. And that's really cool. I didn't realize you could get a book made for free. It's kind of like just speculation on the part of the voice actor.
Yeah, exactly. They just think that maybe this book will sell, so I'll spend the 3 or 4 hours to read it, and then a couple more hours editing and send it out.
Yeah, which is a talent in itself. Somebody asked me to do a voiceover job, and it was just one page, and it took me an embarrassing number of takes to like read something word for word that you didn't write. Is really hard. So good for those guys too who can get it done. And one of the last or one of the other side hustles we were talking about the other day is kind of a cool retainer model business that's doing IT support for local business. You've got obviously background in the IT space, and here's a way to kind of turn that into a recurring revenue stream.
Yeah. So with that, there's so many small businesses out there that they're really good at what they do, but they know nothing about technology. And they really need help. And what I found is that I can offer them, some help to, put some software on their computer where I can remote in and take a look and make sure that their systems are running, the way they should and keep them backed up. And if they have problems, I can just, remote in and fix their problem for them relatively quickly and painlessly and, have them just pay me a monthly fee to keep that going. The model that I usually work is, they'll pay me a monthly fee based on their systems. If they have they're a small business and they have like 2 or 3 computers, they'll pay me a certain amount per computer. And then I would offer like 2 hours of support in addition to just making sure those machines are updated and their antiviruses are updated.
Okay. Yeah, if something goes down, you've got somebody to call and, we'll make sure you're, protected against whatever, whatever the latest threats are.
Yes.
How much are you charging for that?
I usually charge about $200 per computer per month. So if they're a small company that have like, 3 machines, then that'll be like $600 a month. And, I include some offsite backups as well, so they can back it up to one of my cloud storage devices.
Okay.
Just gives them some security. It's almost like an insurance policy.
Yeah, a little peace of mind there. That's, I imagine that's relatively low maintenance for you. So that's kind of a cool business.
Yeah, so most of it's automated. Most people are, honestly, these small businesses are using like Windows 7. Or, Windows 8. And if they are, you can just go in and set that to automatically do updates, at night. You can set up your backups to be automated. And, most of the time I'll like remote in, do a couple of machines once a week or once every other week, depending on the customer. And, just to make sure it still looks good and everything's good and go from there.
What did you find was the most effective way to get these people signed on initially? Did you just like walk into the store and say, "Hey, I'm John. For $200 a month, I will like maintain your computer"?
Most of the time, like I usually find when I'm in a situation, for example, I was at a body shop getting a car fixed, and the guy was like, "Ah, the stupid computer," and I was like, "I'll fix those. Let me just take a look real quick." And he's like, "I don't know." I was like, "Yeah, no charge. Just let me take a look real quick." And I walked over and I, saw he was just doing something, wrong, and it was a user error basically. And I took care of that for him. I said, I offer this support system where I'll remote in and take a look whenever you have any problems, and I'll try to prevent you from having these problems, almost like insurance would do, for a certain fee a month. And I said, as a matter of fact, your first 2 months will be covered if you just fix the car for free. And we kind of swapped that for a little bit, did a little bartering, and then he was signed up.
A little barter service. I like it.
Yeah, it's a great way to get initial customers is barter that first month or two, And I've done the same thing with landscaping and some other projects.
Oh, let me request landscaping bids purposely from the companies that have crappy looking websites so I can go and make an offer there.
Yeah. So that was one of the things that I did is I went online and I found like the 8 companies with the worst websites I could find that, were willing to come out and give me a quote. And they gave me a quote and all those, I kind of just pitched back. And I wasn't asking for something like that needed really, extremely high quality work, just putting some sod down. I went back to him and said, "Hey, look, I think your quote's great, but I build websites, high-end websites. I could, give you a new website for X number of dollars, or maybe we can just swap it, even and call it a day and win-win for both of us." And that's worked out pretty well. It's just like money, right? you're swapping a service, it just keeps you from having to, you know, get the income coming in and then have to pay the money going back out.
Yeah, absolutely. A friend of mine has bartered similar like website services or social media services for, you know, in exchange for house cleaning or in exchange for, you know, yoga classes and stuff. So kind of a different angle at it. Plus, one cool thing is like if you do want to eventually grow this, now you can cite, you know, these companies as clients and say, hey, I worked with this person, and you're not lying at all. You just say, hey, I worked with this person, I worked with this company. And, you know, that gives you some credibility as you go and pitch, as you pitch more and more people.
Yeah, yeah. It helps build your portfolio really, really easily because it's no money out of their pockets.
Absolutely. So we've got the professorship, the mobile app business, the self-publishing business, and now this IT support business that kind of started as like a barter, thing. And now the podcast and everything that's going on. The question I know that a lot of people are asking is like, where are you doing and a family? Like you said, where are you getting the time to do all of this stuff in addition to your day job?
A lot of it happens in the evenings, you know, late at night, and it's really set up to be mostly automated. Like I said, once you've taught the class once, it's you just kind of show up and speak of what you know, right? You shouldn't have to prepare to teach, in my opinion. You should know what you're teaching. You know, if you're a good teacher, if you're teaching something that you don't know, you might not should be teaching it. So there's not a whole lot of time there. And like I said before, I do teach one of my classes during my lunch break. So it's just during the day. It doesn't take any time away from the family. The other one is one night a week. It's a Wednesday night class. The remote work that I do, the technical support stuff, is 99% of that's done remotely. Usually while I'm sitting on the couch watching, you know, football or while my wife's watching some recorded show that I might not care about too much, like Bachelorette or Bachelor or something.
Okay.
And I can just jump on the laptop, you know, set up a couple of automated, you know, processes to kind of back up their machines or something like that, or just verify that the backups went through.
Okay.
I really spend less than probably 2 hours a week managing most of those.
Do you see yourself taking all of these different side hustles into a full-time thing, or you say, hey, this is just kind of some fun stuff I like to do on the side?
I would say the latter. It's just more just fun stuff that I want to do on the side. I really don't desire to kind of take these on to their own thing. I find that doing these activities kind of help me with my day job, and I really do love my day job. It's something that I want to do. I'm not trying to escape it like a lot of people are. I actually enjoy it, and the more I find that I do these activities, they really help me get better at what I do. And since starting some of these, I've been promoted. I've had, you know, people talk about how my productivity at work has actually gotten better. You know, like teaching kind of keeps me sharp. It keeps me focused. As I mentioned, it helps me with recruiting new employees. But doing the technical stuff also keeps me, you know, in tune with what's going on in the industry. I just find that, you know, all these little things kind of add up, and they also show me what's important with running a business and give me that entrepreneurship. Because just being an IT manager, I don't get the ability to own a company or to run a company. But when I have these little side businesses, I do. I get to see the value of, you know, ROI and all those kind of return on investments and how important time is and how you need to prioritize your time properly.
Yeah, it kind of gives you the big picture view of these different things. And I can attest to that as well. Like running a business, like all of a sudden, now my classes at school made so much more sense. Or running a business on the side, now all of a sudden my work in my day job makes so much more sense. Like, why are we doing this? Or, you know, is this really the path to profitability? And so it's kind of a, I like that. Hey, I've got no desire necessarily to leave my job in the near term, but hey, you know, I'm learning a lot, having fun, and making money on the side with all these different little side hobbies. So, John, very cool. Thanks so much for joining me. I think everyone, you should check him out, johnrauta.com. We'll link that up in the show notes, as well as the Geek Leader podcast, the newly launched Geek Leader podcast at ageekleader.com. And John, we'll wrap it up with your number one tip for Side Hustle Nation.
Oh, man. So I've been thinking about this a lot. Like, what could be my number one tip for Side Hustle Nation? And I think it is just keep hustling. You know, keep doing something. Don't ever stop. Don't ever give up, no matter how, you know, challenging it is or how much you think you're kind of running into a brick wall. Just keep going. You'll find some value out of it. And a lot of times, even if you fail, you still learn a lot and you can apply that to your next one. Not all my side hustles have been successful, but the more that I do, the more I learn and the more excited I get to keep going.
I love it, John. Thanks so much. We'll catch up with you soon.
All right, great. Thanks, Nick.
This edition of The Side Hustle Show is brought to you by Audible. Start your 30-day free trial and listen to your first two audiobooks for free at sidehustlenation.com/audible. Now, John mentioned syndicating his Kindle books to audio format for free using ACX, and that got me excited to test it out myself, and I've got to be sure to report back the results on how that goes. Really excited to see what happens there. So when you're all caught up on the podcast, head over to sidehustlenation.com/audible to get your first two audiobooks for free. Now, best book I've read lately is 80-20 Sales and Marketing. Give it a shot if you haven't checked it out. I think you'll like it. And of course, The Martian. It's the first fiction I've read in a long time. What about you? Any book recommendations for me? Hit me up. Let me know. I've got a few in my Kindle queue at the moment, but always on the hunt for more great work. In any case, I hope you enjoyed this conversation with John as much as I did. I loved how he kind of brought it all home at the end with the common theme of these hobbies is that, hey, there's some upfront investment in creation and in hustle, but after that, they're pretty straightforward and in some cases pretty passive to maintain and cash in on. And I also appreciated his acknowledgement that, you know, he's not out to quit his job, but instead kind of recognizes that these entrepreneurial hobbies actually make him more productive and more valuable at work. Now, as is per the usual, I've compiled a free PDF download for you with all the notes, links, highlights, and John's top side hustle tips at sidehustlenation.com/hobbies. And before we wrap, we got a handful of new iTunes reviews to share. iTunes shouts. First one is 5 stars from the ground up. Says, I love the variety of ways presented to get your side hustle on. Thank you for that. Andrew Darlow says, I love the show. Nick is, I waited 50 episodes to leave a review, so I appreciate it. He wanted to get a full sample size, make sure this is good. He says, thank you for that, Andrew. Nate Bills says 5 stars. I like the coaching sessions and the real life transparency. Thank you for that. We're going to try and revive those probably in 2016 or seek some new volunteers for that, because those were definitely fun to put together, even though they kind of self-destructed unexpectedly mid-year here. And then my man Vernon Foster says, the secret is out. Nick knows the hustle and how to serve up actionable content that will get you results. So thank you guys so much for that. If you want to drop in a review, if you've gotten any value out of the last 139 episodes, very much appreciated. SideHustleNation.com/iTunes is the place to go to do that. Thank you so much for listening. Like I said, guys, doing the show is the highlight of my week, and hopefully it's a bright spot in yours as well. Now, we've got some really great stuff lined up for the next few months, and I'm very excited to share all that stuff with you. But until next time, let's go out there, make something happen, and I'll see you in the next edition of The Side Hustle Show. Hustle on.
Thanks for listening to The Side Hustle Show at www.sidehustlenation.com.